Want more stories in your life without adding to your TBR? That's where Audible comes in. I use it for the original novellas, the Plus catalog like Deanna Reborn's Veronica Speedwell series, and those audiobook sales that you can beat. Right now, Audible has a special offer for new and returning members. Click the link in the show notes to see what deal you'll get and start listening today. Welcome to the What to Read Next podcast. In this podcast, your host, Lori Amin, will interview published authors to chat about their work, journey to getting published, and their book recommendations. If you share a passion for books and always looking for your next read, then join us. Hi, Joanna. Welcome to the What to Read Next podcast.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
So happy to have you here. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
My name is Joanna Shoup. I write historical romance set in Gilded Age New York City. And a little bit in Newport, but mostly New York City. Mm-hmm. I've been doing this crazy writers thing. I've been published, my first book came out in 2015. And I landed my publishing contract in 2013. So, you know, it's almost been 10 years for me that I've been doing this crazy writers thing. I live in New Jersey. I have two daughters and yeah, that's about it.
I love this. Yeah. I used to live in New Jersey. I live in New Jersey for 12 years. I just moved this past year. Oh. So I love chatting with fellow New Jersey, you know, and have some New York connections. So I love that you write about New York and historical romance.
Yeah. I'm 30 minutes outside New York City. So yeah. I mean, I'm there, you know, before the pandemic, I was there, I don't know, once a month.
Yeah.
And I just would go all the time. And I lived in New York City for 10 years. Before that, I lived in Chicago for 7, which is also like a great Gilded Age city. So I feel like, you know, I'm kind of a city girl at heart, which is why I love writing books, you know, set in New York City at the turn of the century.
I love this. So I just moved to Chicago. So.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. I moved to Chicago right before the pandemic, like 2 weeks before the pandemic started. So I haven't seen Chicago, but it's a nice city.
It's amazing. I miss it so much. I have so many good friends that are still there and I miss it. I don't get back nearly as much as I'd like. Yeah. I saw some of the best meals I've ever had in my life were in Chicago. It was a blast.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm discovering Chicago. I think that's like a goal, hopefully after the pandemic, to discover a new city. But yeah, I live 15 minutes away from New York City in Jersey. I love New Jersey. I love Jersey City. Like that was like a great place to be. And I work in New York for that long, for 14 years. So.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, but yeah.
But you're a city girl too.
I am a city girl. Yeah. Like I think so because I live in DC before that. So mm-hmm. I have been living in the city, you know, for 17 years. So yeah. So, and I love reading about the city, you know, just getting books set in the city, just kind of like just going with it. So,
yeah.
Were you a romance reader before you become a romance writer, or was it something you just, you know, landed into the writing?
No, I've been a romance reader I started reading really young. I mean, like 10, 11, 12. I used to spend every summer with my grandmother down in Kentucky. And you know, there wasn't a lot to do for us young kids, you know, sort of, in the evenings. And my grandmother was a huge romance reader. Mm-hmm. One of her favorite romance authors was Sabrina Jeffries. She just had she had all the Sabrina Jeffries books. And she, you know, this was back like when the old school, Johanna Lindsay and Julie Garwoods and mm-hmm. sort of that era. And she had, you know, Catherine Woodowitz, she had all of those books in her library. And I just, you know, would go poke around in there. And that is what started sort of my obsession with reading romance. And so I started really young and just kept reading. And I've sort of always wanted to be a writer. I went to college as a journalism major mm-hmm. and thought I would go into sports journalism. Ended up kind of in entertainment marketing, like theater and sports marketing.
Mm-hmm.
From there, I went to work at a tech company, kind of doing more project management and, you know, like simple coding and stuff, mm-hmm. and a little bit of graphic design. So I sort of fell out of using my writing skills a little bit and then was dying to get back into it. And when I graduated college, I was living at home and I was trying to figure out what I was going to do. And I was reading romance novels as fast as I could. I mean, I would read, you know, one every 2 days. Mm-hmm. And my oldest sister said, you know, you should try to write one of those. It can't be hard.
Mm-hmm.
Famous last words. And I was like, well, I don't know. Yeah, I probably could. That would be fun. And she said, I'll sit down and help you think of the plot. And then you can just write it. Because the plot obviously has to be the hardest thing. Mm-hmm. Well, little did we know. But so I was waiting tables at the time, and I would come home from working at the restaurant at like 1:30 in the morning. I would sit down at my little, you know, very early electronic typewriter and type until like maybe 4 or 4:30.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would sleep until noon and then get up and go to the restaurant. And it was just this cycle every single night until I had this finished manuscript. And I loved it. It was such a great, fun thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
And when my sister read it, she, I think, gave me the best compliment that really allowed, you know, it gave me the confidence to say, well, wow, maybe I really can do this. When my sister finally read it, she said, I don't know where you came up with half the stuff that's in here. It's amazing.
Mm.
Just the creativity of it, you know, that I had taken her ideas, you know, that we had talked about together, and I had sort of woven like this real world from it. And so I was like, oh, well, maybe I can really do this. And I put that manuscript away, because then at that point I went to go live in Chicago and, you know, get a quote unquote real job.
Mm-hmm.
And I had this manuscript under the bed. And then years later, I was dating my now husband.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in a job that I was just absolutely miserable in. I'm now in New York. I've gone from Chicago to New York and I've met him, which was great, but I was in a job that I absolutely hated.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just one of those just really toxic work environments that just sucks your will to live. And I would just, you know, I would come home from work and I would lay around just misery. And he said, is there anything you could do that, you know, would make you happy? Like, is there any kind of a hobby you've ever wanted to pursue? Like, I hate seeing you like this. And is there anything that might bring you joy other than just like laying around and thinking about this miserable job? And I said, well, actually, you know, I wrote a romance novel a few years ago, and someday I'm thinking about getting it out and polishing it up and trying to sell it. And I kind of expected him to laugh, because, you know, romance was not his wheelhouse, but he didn't. He, in his former life, had published a music magazine, and he has like all this writing and editing experience. And he said, I think that's amazing. Let's get it out. I'm going to help you edit it, and you're going to sell it. I was like, okay, let's do it. So sure enough, like I found all like the story was so old that it was on like hard disks.
Oh my God.
My old computer. So I got like all the hard disks. I put them together. I like printed the story out, and he started working with me on editing it. And it just ended up that like the story will never see the light of day, but I really loved the process of it. I loved the original writing of it. I loved like the editing of it. I just thought it was really a great like creative outlet for my brain. And it ended up that I did end up pitching the story to the agent that I wanted. She ended up turning it down. And, you know, but she gave me really amazing notes on it. Mm-hmm. And by that time I was in New Jersey and we had just moved to New Jersey and I had joined the New Jersey Romance Writers, mm-hmm. Which is the, you know, Romance Writers of America, the New Jersey chapter. And so I knew like a little bit more about like the business and like I was learning about craft and I was learning, it just, I was soaking up just as much as I absolutely could. And so when she turned down that original historical that I wrote, you know, right out of college, I said, you know, but she gave me all these great notes and I said, thank you so much. I'm actually working on another story that I think you really might like, because it was kind of on the spicy end. And I felt like her clients, a lot of her clients were on the spicy end. Mm-hmm. And I said, so I'm going to send it to you when it's done. And sure enough, when it was done, I sent it off and she, you know, I think possibly I recognized my name in her inbox as somebody that she had, you know, read something for before, because I got like a very fast response that was like, send me the rest of this, please. I would like to read it all. And within a day, she called me and said, you know, I loved the story and, you know, let's try to sell it together. So that's like a very long-winded explanation of how it all happened.
I love this so much. I love the fact that you just like, you use writing as a way to escape a toxic work environment, you know, and
yeah, that's how it started.
Yeah. And like, you know, sometimes that's how it is. Like sometimes we just need that creative outlet. Like for me, I found like some of the stuff that I've done, it's because I was like, I was trying to escape some toxic work environment, you know, yeah. Like, yeah. And the, like, and seeing it grow and seeing the little siblings, the little seed, like it just grew into something different, you know, a new career or a new change.
You know? Yeah. And you need something for yourself. I mean, I think that was like, you know, none of us should be really defined by the jobs that we hold. You know, there should be more to our lives than just like, you know, kind of where you collect a paycheck. Like, you know, some people do have a passionate, you know, day job. And I think that's amazing. I was not one of them. So for me, I just, there had to be something for me to just be able to find something for myself and something that just brought me joy. So yeah.
I love this. And so did you always wanted to write historical, or did you dabble into contemporary or any other genres, you know?
So I have written a contemporary manuscript and it will never, I'm sure, see the light of day. My voice, I, you know, my entry into his romance was the historicals, you know, the Julie Garwoods, the Jude Devereaux's, the Judith McNaught, you know, that is all my gateway into romance. Mm-hmm. And that's what imprinted on me as a very young age. And I feel like when I write, because of my love of historical romance, plus the journalism, my writing tends to be very flat, sort of, what's the opposite of flowery, like very to the point.
Yeah.
And, very, you know, I use a lot of nevertheless and therefore and moreover, you know, it's very, I don't like dry almost. So when I write contemporary, I just don't think I have the voice for it. I think my mind, the way that these stories come out is just, it just feels historical to me. I don't know. I can't describe it, but never say never, never say never. But, you know, I really, and I love history. I mean, I find something, an interesting, you know, research tidbit and I'm down the rabbit hole and I just get, that's what gets me so excited. Is just finding like a little nugget that I can base a whole story on.
I love this. And so let's talk about Gilded Age, because it's a unique, you have a unique market. You've been able to hone in a market that, you know, it's not growing, but it's like its start. So what inspired you to write Gilded Age as opposed to Regency or Victorian or British and just set in Americas, but in this period of time, that's not Western?
Yeah, I have to admit, and I probably am, you know, one of the few historical romance authors that you will hear say that I did not read Jane Austen as a young girl.
Yeah.
I didn't read Austen until I was in my mid 30s.
Okay.
I just didn't. Yeah. I read Edith Wharton.
And oh,
I love, like all of that, the angst, the society clashes, the wealth, for me, that just was my catnip.
Yeah. And,
I just really wanted, I think, the Age of Innocence to end up happily. I mean, spoiler alert for anybody who hasn't read The Age of Innocence, it is not a happily ever after, but it is a love story. And I always wanted that so desperately to be a happy ending. So, you know, for me, I always gravitated towards New York, towards the end of the 19th century. I had relatives that came through Ellis Island.
Mm-hmm.
I visited New York a lot because I had an aunt that lived out in Brooklyn and Park Slope. And so we visited and I got to see like all the craziness of New York City in the 80s. And
mm-hmm.
I just loved it. And yeah, so for me, it's Edith Wharton as opposed to, you know, Jane Austen, which I think a lot of the Regency authors would say was a big, or Hare. And I've never read Georgette Hare. I've never read any of those books. So for me, you know, I fell in love with the American history, really.
Mm-hmm. And so tell us, for those who are new to the genre or new to Gilded Age New York, what is unique about Gilded Age New York that you may only see it in this particular time frame?
What I love about the Gilded Age is, so it's the late 19th century in mm-hmm. America, and it mostly focuses on the big cities.
Mm-hmm.
It's also called the Progressive Age. It's, you know, in Europe, it's sort of the industrial age. It's really when we see America as we know it today really take shape.
Mm-hmm.
As far as, you know, the technology, we start to see telephones, you know, telegraphs, electricity, trains, cars, subways. Start seeing all this crazy wealth, you know, the accumulation of wealth at the top,
mm-hmm.
which leads to a tragic and fascinating dichotomy with those at the bottom of the economic ladder.
Mm-hmm.
And so we see this great disparity in wealth, and by great, I don't mean awesome. I mean, you know, vast.
Yeah.
And we also see women start to gain more independence in the late 19th century, which we hadn't seen before. So mm-hmm. because of now we have department stores, mm-hmm. we have offices, we have bicycles, we have streetcars, women, we have boarding houses. Young women start to move off their family farm and move into the big cities where they can now support themselves. They can get around. And we hadn't seen that before. Before that, you would have lived on your family's farm until, you know, a boy from a neighboring farm, you were either, you know, an arranged marriage, or you met and then you decided to get married, and then you would have gone to live on another farm. I mean, it was a very agricultural society until sort of right after the Civil War. And so, you know, the advent of railroads that allowed people to move much more easily within America. So we see women really start to gain independence in the late 19th century. And that to me is one of the most fascinating things, because I can look back at, you know, all of those early pioneers that we never hear about today because, mm-hmm. you know, history is recorded by, you know, white men. And we don't hear about a lot of people of color. We don't hear about a lot of women. So that for me is really interesting to sort of dig into that history and find things that I can use for stories.
Yeah, I love how your books take me to a time where it's like you didn't think, you know, you assumed it's always been this way, but it just started in 1890 or 1895. Like, you know, I think the Ladies Miracle Mile, like the window display, like we take it for granted, but that started during that period, you know.
Right, right.
Take for granted that started during that period, you know. And so yeah. It was great to just be reminded of, like, you know, get a history lesson with a little bit of romance, you know?
Right. I mean, I try not to overwhelm people with a lot of, you know, dense historical mm-hmm. facts and because I want some kind of pat on the back for my research, which I totally don't. I want it mm-hmm. to find things that make stories, you know, fun. Mm-hmm. The window research was really fascinating. Like I, you know, who knew? I mean, but yeah, that's when those holiday window displays started, was in the Gilded Age, because department stores were just really on the rise after the Civil War and became a really big deal, because now women were out in public. They were looking for things to do. They would go out. That was a social activity for them. Department stores were one of the first places where women could go out in America and eat in public, you know, with each other without a man. Mm-hmm. They also, you know, they had restrooms, which a lot of places in the city didn't have, because why would anybody need those? Because women aren't out and about. So yeah. It really is like a fascinating, you know, it's fascinating to look at how sort of one thing leads to another. Mm-hmm. And obviously the windows were to draw attention and to bring customers to the store. Mm-hmm. And it worked.
It did. And it still works. We
still yeah, those. Right. It still works.
We still get those window displays. So
yeah.
I love this. So let's talk about the Harris Hunt. It's a brand new series. We get to it takes place in New York, but we get to see Newport, which is exciting. So talk to us about what was the source of inspiration, and then what can we expect for the series?
So the previous series, which is the Uptown Girls, was really kind of, it was Uptown women with Downtown men. Mm-hmm. So I didn't want to do the same thing, and I wanted to kind of mix it up a little bit, but I wanted to keep the sense of like a bad boy hero, kind of like the outsider bad boy hero.
Yeah. And
so the name of the series is the Fifth Avenue Rebels. Mm-hmm. And it's four heroes these four friends in college who all sort of bond because their fathers are all terrible. And mm-hmm. they each deal with that in different ways. You know, one of them becomes kind of a rake who doesn't take anything seriously. One of them pushes back, like on every, you know, like stands his ground and kind of pushes back on everything. And Harrison, who's the hero of the Harris Hunt, happens to leave. He leaves New York City for Paris, mm-hmm. and he's gone for a couple years. So the idea for the book was, I love reunited, I love a second chance romance. I love a childhood friends to mm-hmm. lovers romance. And this was sort of my swing at combining those. Mm-hmm. And people have been asking me for years when, you know, please write something set in Newport. Like, when are we going to see more of Newport? I've had mm-hmm. Newport in like a couple books, like kind of just as a, you know, kind of a throwaway scene or two. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people really were were wanting to see a book, you know, more of Newport. So I didn't want to set the entire book in Newport, but I think The Heiress Hunt, half of it takes place in Newport. And the second book, which is The Lady Gets Lucky, also it takes place concurrently to The Heiress Hunt. Mm-hmm. And half of it is in Newport. So you'll get a lot of Newport in the series and some New York City. I mean, it's kind of like half and half.
Yeah, I love the fact that we got to see the summer homes, like the big houses in Newport, and then you just go back to the city and you get to that. And we were in Philly too, because we had the tennis competition.
So. Right, right. So also in the late 19th century, in the Gilded Age, we start to really see sports go from being kind of this amateur pastime into something that people actually did for money and for, you know, we see golf, we see baseball, and tennis really become like these organized professional sports. And so, I love sports. I love tennis. Mm-hmm. And I just thought that would be a really interesting, look at what it would have been like for, you know, one of these women who, you know, Maddie loves tennis and she's really good at it. Mm-hmm. And she kind of persuades her family to let her take a real shot at it. Like, mm-hmm. let me really go play and see how well I can do. Mm-hmm. And I just thought that it was interesting to see, you know, a woman pursuing a sport as opposed to maybe, you know, a man, you know, really, really pushing for a career in The Heiress Hunt. It's really her that is trying to succeed professionally.
Yeah, I really love that storyline of Maddie, like just in the process of being, you know, an athlete, like the training that she goes through, the expectations that she has to go through, you know, for her to go and to be, you know, an elite athlete at that time period, which was, I felt that it was like a really fun, unique aspect of it that I haven't seen in other books, which is fun.
Oh, good. I mean, you know, I tried to keep it kind of tennis light because I know, you know, sports are not everybody's thing and tennis, you know, it's not everybody's thing and some people find it confusing. So I kind of tried to keep it a little tennis light as far as like explaining kind of, you know, the rules and like the games and stuff, but hopefully I put enough in there to make it fun.
Yeah. It's like, I don't know. It's like a sports romance too. Like if we think about contemporaries, like in sports romance, or there's a little bit of tennis, you know, that we typically don't see in historical romance. Yeah. So
yeah.
Yeah. I love it. So, and then the second book, when is the next book coming out?
So the second book is October. Ooh. And it's called The Lady Gets Lucky. And it is, it takes place concurrently with The Heiress Hunt. So you'll get to see like a little bit more of sort of what's going on behind the scenes with Harrison, because the hero of the second book is Kit, which is Harrison's BFF. So, and it's a lot of fun. I had a lot of fun writing that one. It's basically like a kissing lessons story.
Ooh, I am so excited. By the way, I love this whole bachelor dating pool that you had going on in The Heiress Hunt. You know, like
yeah, I mean it's kind of the bachelor set in Newport, which is how I describe The Heiress Hunt.
Yeah, I love it. I was like, it's just like the bachelor. There's like different datings, you know.
Yeah, and they play like different games and you know, it's all about getting to know him and you know. Yes. Yourself off to your best advantage and but really none of them know that he's already settled on on who he wants.
I love this. So let's have some book recommendations. So which authors are some of your autobuy authors you can write the grocery list and you're like, I'm already buying the book?
I read very widely. I read a ton The books that I think stay with me the most, that like my auto by authors, are like the authors that are really gifted wordsmiths. Mm-hmm. I mean, I always say like Kate Claiborne, Sonali Dev, mm-hmm. Sarah McLean, mm-hmm. Kennedy Ryan.
Yeah.
I mean, they they know how to craft a sentence. I mean, the word choice is just exceptional. You get all the feels like in every single sentence. And I mean, those are like, when I read their works, I'm like, I'm giving up writing. Like, clearly I will never, ever be up here at this pinnacle and be able to write like these ladies do. I should just give up. But yeah, I mean, all of their book. I mean, those are, you know, Sierra Simone is another one that's in that same group. So those are like my auto buy authors, where I know I'm going to buy it. I'm going to sit down and just, you can't skip a word, because mm-hmm. It's all just too delicious.
Yes, I agree. I agree with your recommendation. And there are also my autobi authors. So I love this. And so what has been a book you read this past year or last year that you can't stop gushing about?
So, I mean, there have been a lot. I mean, I probably would mention too, I loved Boyfriend Material by Alexis Hall. That was one of my favorite books last yes. year. I mean, it was one of those books where you just laugh, you cry. I don't think anybody writes like Alexis does. And that was a book that, I mean, I finished it and then immediately started to reread it, because I just thought it was so fantastic. The other thing in 2020 that like saved my sanity were the Jessa Kane books. I don't know if you've read Jessa Kane.
Yeah, it's on my to-do list. So tell me more.
They are totally bananas. They are very short and okay. very hot. Ooh. And you know exactly from the title of the book what you are getting. I mean, the covers are perfect. The titles are perfect. You know, like the gangster's masseuse. Okay. Like, you know exactly what you're getting, you know, his prize pupil, suddenly his, I mean, it's like, you just immediately, and every single one just starts with a bang and like never lets up. And they're just like candy. That was for me in 2020. I mean, I read every single Jessa Kane book that has been out, and I just adore them.
Oh my gosh, I have to pick them up. But yeah, I had them. I keep hearing about them in the pandemic. And it's like one of those secrets, like, you should definitely read these books just because they're bananas. And so I just haven't gotten around to it. But now you add it, and I'm like,
you will love them. You yeah. will absolutely. I mean, and the great thing is there's a Jessa Kane for everybody. Like, the, yeah. you know, if like the male female stuff is too hot, then you've got like a sweeter kind of, you know, like a queen and her prison guard. I mean, it's like, it just runs the gamut. Like, there's literally something for everybody.
Yeah, I'm here for it. I just finished reading some Nikki Sloan, and I was like, I just need like,
which one?
The Pool Boy and the Doctor.
And which one?
The Doctor and the Pool Boys and Nashville yeah. Neighbors. And I'm just reading Filthy Rich Americans.
Oh my God, my favorite. My favorite.
Yeah, I was like, I remember telling my community, I was like, you know, I'm feeling like reading some Nikki Sloan. Like, I read her a few years ago and I loved it. And I was like, I haven't picked her up. And so one of them was like, just read The Pool Boy. I was like, I do own it. And I'm like, I'm going to read it. I read it in one sitting, and I was like, I need to just devour the next book.
Yes. Yeah. I love all of those books. The McAllister book is one of my all-time favorite books Ooh. Ever. I mean, I can't even, like, that book was so good. And she has another one in the Nashville series coming out, I think, yes. at the end of January.
It's a menage. I can confirm it's a menage. It's a male female polyamory.
No, wait, this is The Architect.
Yep, The Architect, yeah.
God, I can't wait. When does it come out?
It comes out next month because I actually just, I went to her PR, to a PR publicist, and I was like, I need to talk to Nikki. And I need an R. And so we're working on getting her to come on the show. And so I was like, I need to know like what to expect. Like I got a teaser on the synopsis, but I want to know, like, is it?
Oh my God. I can't wait.
Yeah. Yeah. So it just sounds so good. I was like, we're talking with the policy. She was like, you know, I don't know about that neighborhood, but that neighborhood seems to be,
a wild neighborhood. I want to live in that neighborhood.
I want to live in that neighborhood, except Judy, the HOA, you know?
Right. No, I love, love, love all of her books. I mean, she's she holds nothing back. She goes for it. She takes a big swing every time. And I, as an author, you know, I do try to give the reader something they've never read before in every single book. And so I always appreciate it when authors do that, when they try to sort of write outside the lines. And I think Nikki does that really well.
Yeah, she does. So, oh my gosh, I'm so glad. So now I have Jessa Kane to read next.
Now, if you like Nikki Sloan, you're going to love Jessa Kane.
Oh my gosh, I can't wait. So tell us where we can find you online.
Oh goodness, I'm everywhere. I'm on Twitter, I'm at Joanna Shoup. On Instagram, I'm at Joanna Shoup. I'm Joanna Shoup author on Facebook. My website is joannashoup.com. And I send out like a monthly newsletter full of like Gilded Age historical tidbits and pictures of clothing and fun stuff like that.
Awesome. Thank you, Joanna, for being on the show.
Thanks for having me, Laura. This was fun.
If you enjoyed this podcast, feel free to share with friends, subscribe, rate, and review the show. This is the easiest way to support this podcast. Once you connect with fellow romance readers and make new friends, get weekly book recommendations, attend monthly meetups, then join our Patreon community. You can join at whatyourextblog.com/Patreon. Romance lovers, check out Queen Bee Reads Etsy shop for cute and comfortable bookish apparel. The shop also features social justice apparel and fun items from some of your favorite TV shows like The Schitt's Creek and The Office. Use code WHATTOREAD10 to save. Visit whatyourextblog.com/QueenBeeReads. What to Read Next podcast is part of the Frolic Podcast Network. Discover new podcasts to love on frolic.media/podcast. Thank you so much for listening and have a great day.
Are you an author, publisher, or book-related business looking to reach passionate readers? What to Read Next podcast is a perfect place to connect with an engaged audience of romance and mystery lovers who are always in the hunt for their next great read. Now, we're offering sponsorship opportunities. Whether you're launching a new book, promoting an upcoming release, showcasing a bookish product or services, we can help you get the word out. Let's work together to bring your books or businesses to readers who are ready to discover something new. Please visit whatyourextblog.com/sponsorships. To learn more or reach out to chat about the perfect sponsorship or package for you. Thank you much for listening. Your next great reader is waiting for you.